And it started out being pretty brutal. Because all we were doing is repeating metaphrases over and over again. May I be safe? May I be happy? May I be peaceful? Which are beautiful phrases.
Right.
But if you're not used to doing it and you're not used to offering it to yourself, there can be a lot of resistance.
Right.
And then there was a moment after about 3 days of just doing this over and over again where my heart just cracked wide open. Mm. And it just sunk in.
Welcome to Soul Story. I'm Adam R. Hill. We have conversations with people about how they feel spirit in their lives, how they feel connected to the divine, however they understand that. Today we talk with Lisa Ernst, a dedicated metta meditation teacher who has a strong background in Zen practice. Lisa is also an accomplished artist and photographer, and her artwork expresses the beauty of nature. Today we talk with Lisa about her love of one of the primary focuses of her artwork, Nashville's Radnor Lake. During our conversation, Lisa discusses her personal losses, which drew her towards finding a meditation practice, her reactions to her practice, and finding comfort through the practice. Soul Story, Season 1, Episode 5, Lisa Ernst, Part 1 of 2. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us on Soul Story.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So we are here at the beautiful Radnor Lake on a wonderful morning. And we're just, for the viewer and for the listener, we're looking out over this pristine lake in southern Nashville, Tennessee. And you can hear all the joy in the background and might even get a few distractions this morning, but that's just a part of what's here for us. So, Lisa, we'd like to just start off by telling us a little bit about your experience with this lake and this area.
Well, I've been familiar with Radnor Lake for many, many years. And about maybe 15 years ago, I moved into the area. I actually live just a few streets over from Radnor, and so I spend many, many hours here, both hiking, contemplating, and photographing this beautiful place. It's just a place of refuge for me, a place to relax, a place to just bring myself and enjoy the beauty and just take in everything that it has to offer. So I consider it very much a part of my spiritual practice to be here and to just be so present with the beauty of what this place has to offer.
And so do you remember the first time that you had a chance to see it, or how you ended up finding it?
Well, I actually saw it as a child. My father built one of his first houses. He was an architect, and he built a house on Otter Creek Road. And my grandparents bought the house from him. And as a child, when I would come to visit, we would drive Otter Creek through Radnor Lake. And I would look around and I would see the lake and I would see the green algae. And it really made a deep impression on me. This was when cars could still drive through the lake. And so I still have those memories from just as a little kid and just seeing the lake and especially the green algae, because I'd never seen anything like that before in the summer. So all these years, you know, I've had that exposure to Radnor Lake.
Yeah, that green algae is fascinating to look at, which seems like such an oxymoron to some extent, you know, because it's so stable and everything else here seems so fluid.
Yeah, that's so true, especially in the summer when it really starts to build. You know, the algae becomes, you know, quite present, especially on days when it's warm and it's not so windy, but then all of a sudden it disappears again. It's unpredictable, but it's always here every year, you know, so something we always see.
Well, I'd like to ask you about your connection to nature in general, and I mean, when you were a kid, did you have Did you make excuses to get out here whenever you could? Was that who you were?
I think when I was really young, I lived in Atlanta in a place that was had some apartments that were surrounded by undeveloped land. And so my friends and I would go out there all the time, and we would play in what was still an undeveloped area. So it was really where we had our most fun. And those places are harder to find these days.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was always a connection for me. So nature has always meant a lot to me. And as I got older, you know, it became, of course, more deliberate, more intentional. And when I first discovered Radnor Lake as a place to actually come and hike and walk, I was pretty overcome by what was available here. It was so amazing to come and in the spring to look at the wildflowers and to hike the trails, and it just was such a special place for me.
And I remember when I have those moments, and they come rarely, but when they come, they're quite precious.
Yeah.
And when you think of one of those moments for you where you might have that moment of connectivity or peace, whatever it is that you define as your connection, what does that feel like for you?
It feels like coming home. It feels like being embraced by something bigger than myself that I can just relax into and begin to let go of my worries and my cares and just relax into the moment and open my heart, open my mind, let down my defenses and just be present and embraced and relaxed. It's just something I always appreciate, and it's definitely something I experience here.
Right. When those moments come for me, I find myself trying to drink it all in, you know, trying to label it or capture it, almost like a photograph in my mind. Have you ever had that feeling where you just want to record it, grab it, and hold on to it, or is it more relaxed and just presence for you?
More often now, it's become more relaxed. I've certainly had those moments when something was just so profound that I just wanted to say, "Well, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. You know, and how can I keep this?" But I've always discovered, probably because I've had such a long-term meditation practice and have done this for so many years, that I've always discovered that as soon as I do that, it becomes elusive. It slips away from
right.
me. And so more and more, I just, when it comes, I've learned to just appreciate it, fully aware that it will subside, you know, that mm-hmm. it's not going to be a permanent experience, but just to really appreciate it and acknowledge it when it's here and just let it go as it passes. So it's taken me a while to get to that point where I can do that, but then I can understand sort of the natural rhythm of these moments of really coming home and being present and then knowing that it will fade away, but then it will come back again.
So. Right. Right. There's always the next one.
Yeah. Fortunately.
if you provide that space for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Well, when you were growing up, did you have any experience of spirituality? Were your experiences all outside, or were they interlinked with your Western upbringing?
Mm. I had very little experience of spirituality growing up, at least not until I got into maybe my mid-teens, 15 or 16. As a child, I really didn't have any kind of spiritual upbringing at all. My mother would occasionally take me to a Unitarian church, but we didn't go regularly. There really wasn't anything provided that would give me a sense of what that might become for me. Mm. So it was only when I got into my teens and I was actually dealing with a lot of pain and loss. You know, my parents both died when I was young, my mom when I was 13, my dad when I was 16, and I was desperately seeking some kind of answer. And during that time, I began to look for answers, and I began to study Hinduism, Buddhism. I was looking for something that would make sense of my life, and in that I found some teachings on impermanence that talked about how life is constantly coming and going, beginning and ending, and it sort of helped me make some sense of the loss of my parents. And that was sort of the beginning point for me of connecting with some kind of spirituality that could make sense in my life. It wasn't until later that I actually began to realize it in a more actualized way. Mm. But at least initially there was some intellectual understanding and something that at least helped me make sense of my life.
Right. And for that intellectualized place sometimes can be such a difficult space.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, for when we experience loss, the tendency is to try to figure it out with the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were going through those experiences of your loss, did you confront that intellectual experience? And is that where you were looking for the answers?
I think I was in such a state of not knowing and confusion that just hearing those words were helpful to me, but they didn't give me the tools to deal with it. And so what happened was I spent quite a few years in a state of depression, and I was lost in terms of how to deal with it. And so there were quite a few years that I was almost frozen with it. And it took me a long time to begin to unpack and to begin to deal with those losses. And I think the confluence of going into therapy and starting a meditation practice, those two things together were what allowed me to begin to deal with and work with my loss. So it was later on in adulthood that I was really beginning to be able to do that. And I think up until then, I just wasn't ready. I didn't
right.
know how to do it.
Right.
So it was like something at a distance that I just couldn't quite touch.
Do you remember how you found meditation?
I experimented a little bit as a teenager, you know, at that time when I was just beginning to learn a little bit about these practices, but I didn't know what to do, and I overdid it, and I got scared, and so I stepped away from it.
Really?
Yeah.
What was frightening?
Well, I kind of was working with a Kundalini style.
Oh, boy.
And I encouraged the Kundalini to open up in me, and it did. And it scared the life out of me. I thought I was going to die. You know, it was too much too soon. And I was too young.
For our listeners who aren't particularly familiar with the Kundalini practice, it has many warnings associated with it in many different traditions, because it can be extremely psychologically and physiologically powerful. So just with that context in mind, how on earth did you find your way there?
I was reading a book, and it was like a yoga book, actually, but it talked about Kundalini practices. And I thought, oh, this sounds really cool. I'd love to awaken the Kundalini energy within me. And so I sort of willed it to happen. And unfortunately, it did happen, and it
yeah.
just exploded open, you know, and there was just this terror, because I just wasn't prepared. I had never really practiced or developed anything in my life. And so that immediately turned me away from meditation, because
sure.
I was just terrified. And it took some years before I was stable enough and ready enough to come back. And then when I was ready to come back, there was just a day that I was out one day, and I saw a little sign on a bulletin board, and it said Zen meditation. And something said, ah, oh, this is it, I'm ready. And so I went to the place that was offering it. And back then, this was late 80s, early 90s, and there weren't a lot of centers back then. So I was at it was going to be held at somebody's house. And I remember sitting in front of the house that morning trying to work up my nerve to go in, and I lost my nerve and I drove back home again.
Did you really?
And then the next Saturday came around. A week later, I'm like, okay, I got my courage up, and I actually went in.
Oh,
and that's where I began. And so I practiced with, it was the Nashville Zen Center, and I practiced with them for like 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
You know? And then I moved into a different practice, but that was my starting point.
And was there a delay for you when you started from the time you sat down and gave it a shot, before you saw either the results, or maybe it was that first time that you felt it in you?
Mm-hmm.
Or for some people have many, many years of a delay. What was your experience?
Well, the first time I meditated there was interesting to me. I can't say that I wasn't quite ready, but what happened was somebody there at the group that day said, well, we have a teacher coming in next weekend, and we're going to be doing a 3-day retreat. And would you want to consider just coming for one of the 3 days? And I thought, well, that's interesting. And in the Zen tradition, a lot of times they start really early and they sit into the night. So we're talking about 4:30 to 10 o'clock. And so I committed and I came. And I actually did did the whole day, and I got halfway into the day, and I started thinking, what am I doing? Have I completely lost my mind? You know, I as many people do on that first experience, right. You know, there's that sense of almost feeling alienated or uncertain. But then what happened for me is I walked out the door that night. It was when I left, I felt something, and it felt good. And something in my mind just said, this is right. This is something that is going to be really great for you. I could just feel it in my being, and I knew I was on the right path. So even though I hadn't quite connected fully yet with the actual experience of the practice, just doing that day of sitting helped me to see how important that was going to be in my life.
Wow. So is it, we have a visitor.
Oh, wow. Blue hair on it.
My goodness.
Beautiful.
But going back to that time with your meditation practice, and you sort of felt it and knew at the same time, was it a blend of an intellectual thing for you, or was it just a drive that was overpowering that you knew that this was for you?
It was really truly coming from my experience. It wasn't intellectual at that point. It had moved into something else. It was just a deep inner knowing. And that was really, it was just that point where it just connected my body, my heart, my mind, everything. It just sort of appeared.
Right. The Zen practice is a beautiful aspect of Buddhism, mm-hmm. and it's a branch of Buddhism, but it's not the only one.
Right.
Did you ever find that when you're in those moments that you're wondering if you should explore a different branch? Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. And what happened for me is that I was really deeply committed to Zen practice exclusively for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, you know, I was just very immersed in it and very committed to it. But then there was a point where something switched for me. And I began to realize that I needed to expand my knowledge of meditation and my own personal experience of meditation so that it wasn't exclusively Zen any longer. You know, with Zen, you're very much focusing on opening to direct experience, where you're letting go of the subject and the object and you're just being completely present in your experience. And what I found interesting in beginning to explore the Theravada tradition is that, you know, there's an object that is being focused on, whether it's the breath, the body, thoughts. In a sense, we get to know our minds through sort of looking and observing. And I found that to be useful and helpful, to bring in this whole other part of the practice that wasn't just focused on emptiness or no self, but that I could begin to explore in a settled way my own mind, my own heart, in an observational format, you know, which was something I did. And also one of the things I really began to appreciate about the Theravada tradition was the focus on loving kindness, metta, and the Brahma Viharas, and to bring in the heart practices. So that really helped fill out my practice. So I really was appreciative of beginning that. And that's really where I began with Theravada. After doing Zen for 10 years, I went to a five-night metta retreat, where all we did was do metta for 5 days. And it started out being pretty brutal, because all we were doing is repeating metta phrases over and over again. May I be safe, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, which are beautiful phrases.
Right.
But if you're not used to doing it and you're not used to offering it to yourself, there can be a lot of resistance.
Right.
And then there was a moment after about 3 days of just doing this over and over again where my heart just cracked wide open. Mm. And it just sunk in. And that was a complete change, and after that it was effortless. I didn't have to try. I didn't have to try to create some sense of equanimity and loving kindness through those practices. It was just there, just opened up.
That sounds like a real breakthrough.
Yeah, it really was. It was after that, and the rest of the next 2 days were lovely. You know, at that point, it was like, oh, this now I'd like it to just keep going on and on. Whereas before, it was like, when is this going to end?
Right. Well, many of us have so many, you know, our internal dialogue with ourselves may not be so kind.
Yes. Oh, that's so true.
Join us next week as we conclude our conversation with Lisa. We discuss her transition into teaching the Dharma and her offerings for those seeking guidance in overcoming obstacles. you can join Lisa's community at onedharmanashville.com or view her photography at lisaernst.com. That's LISAERNST.com. Soul Story is independently produced and can be found at my website, adamrhill.com. If you have enjoyed the series thus far, please take a few seconds to kindly rate the program on iTunes. Until next week, take care.